Thursday, August 1st, Technical Advisory Committee. We have a quorum.
We do.
First item is meeting minutes from the last meeting, and a motion is required.
Pauling, move to approve. Costco, second.
Is there any further discussions? All right, take a vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any negatives, noes? Same sign? All right, it passes. All right, we'll move on to staff reports. Curtis.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 3A, you'll see through June 30th, we spent about 66% of the budget, so we will be carrying over some money. We do about to have a job posting in the work for a GIS technician, so we're hoping to get a little bit more staff on board, as we all know the challenges that come with that. But with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Motion is required.
Tomasi, so moved. Pauling, second.
Further discussion? Let's take a vote. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign. Motion passes. Technical progress report, Matt Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, everyone. So first, I hope you're all enjoying the AMATS summer reading challenge. We had our 255-page mail-out packet, which is probably about the biggest mail-out packet that there's ever been. We don't expect you to know all those details. That's kind of been a big part of today, is to kind of go through. We've been doing a lot of our input documents for Outlook 2050, our upcoming long-range plan. So we'll be diving into that in a little bit. I did want to mention, if you didn't see when you walked in, our bike maps are complete. There's been a little bit of some production challenges, so we don't have all of them yet. But we do have several here. I hope I don't have to take any back. If you want a larger order, we have 180 per box. So if you want a box or a couple boxes or however many you want, just let us know. We have a sign-in sheet at the front table. We can either bring those next week to the policy meeting if you're going to be here, or we can arrange to have them delivered to you. But we have, I think, 7,000 in this initial order, so if you want bike maps, we have. Just wanted to mention that our annual meeting is going to be held on October 11th, which is Friday. It will be at the Sheraton in Cuyahoga Falls once again. Registration will be opening at the beginning of September, so kind of keep an eye out for those emails. And then the last thing I wanted to share is just after the meeting today, Heather's going to be doing a post-meeting website demo. We have our new website, which launched since we met in May. So she'll be walking through anyone that would like to stick around and kind of see all the features of our new website. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Next item is AMATS Federal Funds Report. Amy?
Thank you. So as of July 1st, we just started the new fiscal year, and so far all we've had was air quality and rideshare encumber from CMAQ funds. We do have quite a few first quarter projects, either right-of-way or construction, that are supposed to encumber in the first quarter, but they have not encumbered yet. Currently, we were asked by ODOT to try to make sure that we had as many projects in 25 as we could, and we do. We are really, really over-programmed in 25. They have assured me that we will be able to get loans, so if you're looking at the bottom line and seeing a lot of negatives, we're hoping to get loans for those. They really don't want things in 26 statewide. 26 is really in bad shape. They're really negative, so if we can get loans this year, then we can repay them back next year and help the bottom line for the whole state. So if you're concerned about those negative numbers, that's kind of what's going on there. So, also, I wanted to let everyone know here that our project review meetings for our quarterly meetings are coming up. District 3's quarterly meeting is August 8th, which is next week, in the morning. And then District 4's project review meeting is August 15th. So it's like 2 weeks from today. And that's obviously all day. I'm still waiting for ODOT to get back to me with their projects so that I can finalize the agenda. And then I will be sending that out to everyone. So, anyone have any questions?
Thank you, Amy. Is there any old business?
There's not.
So moving on to new business. Amy and Matt will discuss highway preservation needs.
Hello again, thank you. I'm going to be giving a very brief report on our highway preservation needs report. We are going to be asking our committees this month to approve the final. It's a pretty straightforward, simple yet very important plan because so much of our funds over the next 23 years go to system preservation. We recognize at AMS that maintaining and preserving the existing highway system should be a priority, always have, probably always will. So today I'm just going to walk you through a couple of things. The draft reports are in your mail packet. This is something that we do every time we update our long-range plan. So the first part of this is just kind of walking you through where our system is right now in terms of pavement quality. Up and down a little bit each year, but our pavement condition indexes are hovering in the mid to upper 60s. And bridges, we have about 1,300 across the whole system. One noteworthy thing is our poor condition bridges did increase a little bit from 41 to 55. So we have a lot of bridges that are kind of nearing the end of their useful life, built in the 50s and 60s. So, you know, that's certainly something to consider. This is kind of where the magic happens, and Amy or I can certainly answer any questions if there are any. It's detailed in the report, but basically Amy reaches out with ODOT. They gave us a lot of updated costs based on what they're seeing with bids that have come in recently in terms of, you know, the cost per lane mile of roadway and those sorts of things. At the end of the day, we estimate that it's going to be nearly $7 billion to just preserve our system, kind of the status quo. So that's a 71% increase from just 5 years ago. That would have actually been an 81% increase had we not really taken a look at some of our assumptions and tried to right-size those. We had a lot of discussions internally and then ultimately reached out to ODOT to kind of get, you know, what are you guys seeing? We know that we're not resurfacing roads every 10 years. We also know that we're not going to replace 5% of our pavement before 2050. We knew that those numbers were high, so we kind of right-sized those to be a little more realistic. And then the last thing I just wanted to cover is what are those costs? We're estimating $1.9 billion for resurfacing roadways. So this would be all of our federally funded eligible roadways, so not our minor collectors, not our local roadways, or our rural minor collectors, I should say, but all of our higher class roads, $1.9 billion, 52% increase. Our pavement replacement costs did go down a little bit, and that's really just because of we have been assuming 5%, now we're assuming 2% of our overall system. Those are a little shy of $120 million. Finally, our bridge preservation costs, which are always our largest component of this, we're looking at $4.45 billion by 2050. That's nearly an 88% increase from the 2019 report. So these costs are up for a variety of factors. Obviously, construction costs are way up, inflation. You know, there's been a lot of inflation since 2019. But this is significant. I believe in the last, in Outlook 2045, I want to say it was a little north of $5 billion that went toward, or, you know, estimated toward our roadway system. So this is in excess of that number. So we'll be using this as an input when we really get into the weeds on Outlook 2050 later this fall and into the winter. So that's just in a nutshell kind of what our preservation report is and some of the eye-popping figures in it. But if there are any questions, Amy and I are happy to answer them. Yes, Joe.
Question regarding, do you consider other sources of funding when you're putting this together, such as OBWC or an ongoing project that has some federal money?
Well, this process here is not looking at funding. This is just saying what the dollar amount needs are. When we get into our long-range plan, we will, you know, we'll take how much money we expect to receive through all the various different sources and kind of go from there. Okay, thank you.
Oh. Yes. All right. If there's no further questions, a motion is requested. All in favor?
Jim Bowling moved to approve.
Second, Collins.
Second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed, same sign. Motion passes. So the next item for discussion only is draft congestion mitigation process. Mrs. Curtis.
All right. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. So 5B in our litany of draft plans and documents is looking at congestion. The last time we did the congestion management process, we had been instructed by the Federal Highway Administration that we needed to start looking at things called free flow speed, average speed, and then congestion percentage. This is not V over C or kind of those old calculations. This is basically saying the way we monitor congestion now that the feds have given us guidance on is that we need to see what's the free flow speed through the corridor, which is calculated usually through cell phone usage now to determine, hey, 3 in the morning you can get through this corridor and your average or your speed would be 65 miles an hour on a 55 mile an hour freeway. And then you take what the average speed is during peak time. So let's say the average speed on that highway is 45 miles per hour. 45 over 65 gets you a percentage. Then you do 1 minus that percentage, and you get the congestion percentage. So the higher the level of congestion in the report, the worse a location is seen as being in terms of it. What we've identified through this analysis, and you'll see there's the attachment map. It's an 11 by 17. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get the labels on there because of the size of everything, but we are going to do a web map of this. There's a couple of things you see. Number one, our favorite Talmadge circle here is actually number one. But the reason that is because of the way that cars stop and wait to turn to have the ability. So that shows up as congestion. It doesn't, in a way, it confirms that we know the numbers are good, but it also doesn't mean that that's necessarily a problem, right? We know the way the Talmadge circle functions. We know it slows vehicles down. So there is like this dichotomy between wanting to have lower levels of congestion, but also focusing on things like pedestrians, bike users, basically all the users of the roadway as well. Through our report, one of the things that we do when we look at, that we're required to do, is look at potential strategies to fix congested areas that are identified. Part of this draft was to provide you with the list that's very similar from our report 4 years ago. There's tiers that the federal government outlines of different types of congestion mitigation. Primarily, AMAX likes to stick in 1 through 4, which are all the strategies that do not require additional through lanes. As Matt just went on in our last report, when we have $7 billion to fix it first, the reality is most of our congestion issues do not rise to the level of major widenings. And so then what we do is we take all the roadways that are identified in this congestion report, and we do a recommended strategy that would potentially alleviate those. So the list that you have in front of you are all the segments that are shown as being congested, and then you have a suggested recommendation, whether it be an ITS strategy, public transit, operational improvements, etc. My optimistic part of me thought maybe we'd actually bring you a full draft of this plan come September, but it's a very large document, and while I think it'll be completed by September, I think we'll want you guys to look at it again. But what we're really asking you to do right now is, one, look at the locations. I think what you'll discover is that some of them are just signal timings. You know, some of them are signals that are slow because the number of legs of the interchange or intersection. There are some, like State Route 8 southbound into the central interchange, that we all know it's bad. There's nothing we're going to recommend right now with the interchanges because all of the construction that's going on throughout the whole Beltway system. So, but what I'd really like to do is have you guys take a look at these. Do they make sense? And do the recommendations, even though they're very vague recommendations, fit into an approach that you might have? Or there might be some, like in Talmadge Circle might be one of them, where it's like, you know what, we're just going to keep monitoring this because we're okay with it. I think about Hudson with some of the congestion that's shown there. We've got the smart signals projects, but after that, you know, there's never going to be a recommendation to tear down the clock tower. So we accept a level of congestion. And I think that's the kind of report that we're trying to write, is one that understands that there are congestion issues. They're usually localized. They're usually now for very short windows of time. And the strategies that we've put forth are ones that we think would be ones that would have also the least impact to those users that are also using the roadways, not via the automobile as well. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but this is something that we expect or hope that you have an opportunity to look at, provide feedback on, especially if there's roadways that pop up in here in your community that you're saying, we really disagree with this, or can we look at deeper in the numbers? We're happy to do that. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any. Tony.
I know staff will do this, but just a request that when you look at these corridors, you guys understand and look at the nuances that are involved. And if you have any questions, we can certainly, you know, answer those for you. For example, if a corridor has a train crossing and that train blocks traffic for 3 to 5 minutes, and it takes 15 to 20 minutes for that queue,
that'll show up very clearly.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one where, say, if we have something and you look at it too and you say, you know, really, this is something we just are living with, then we want to change that. Hey, we're going to monitor it and see if it gets any worse. And those are the types of things that we were trying to be aware of as we went through the, you know, I think there's 84 arterial ones. But in this draft, if you think we've missed any, or like the Broad Boulevard, I don't know what we put in there. I think I might have said transit and maybe an operational, you know, in reality, we just want to build a new interchange probably. Yeah, those comments, I think, are really appreciated for us to make sure we're in the right spot. Oh, sorry.
I thought it was interesting when I read it. The one thing that came to mind for staff and us to consider the future is how this plays out in the funding policy guidelines when they get updated next year for the next round of funding.
Yeah.
I believe there's points that get assigned if you're on in the plan, but just from seeing the one area Kent in it, it's like we would never.
Right, you never touch it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's. So that's something just to consider as we move forward, because how we use this document is important.
Yeah.
I have a quick question. So the traffic signal inventory that GPD is performing, how does that tie in with the long range plan?
Yeah, so hopefully when we collect all the data, what we really want to try to determine is, like, where are those signal interconnects that we can maybe take advantage of, or where is the potential for future signal interconnects? And I think one of the sections that's not in this draft, but that I'm working on with, that is one of the things we're required to do is look at past projects and look at, hey, what was the congestion before, what was the congestion after? And, you know, seeing a lot of success with a couple of our roundabout projects, success with traffic signal interconnection when signals have been replaced. So I think those things are going to be things that we're going to lean on pretty heavily in the plan in terms of recommending for what projects we want to fund in the future. Yeah. But as Jim said, it is like it's a completely new way of looking at things. You know, and we picked 35% as being the 35% congested as being sort of that first line of, okay, maybe this is something we want to look at a little bit further. And one of the things we wanted to change was like, you know, 55% and higher doesn't necessarily mean like danger F failing. It just means it could be for a 15-minute period, and it could be school. You know, it could be a school zone. And we've got the data now with the cell phones that pick up that level of detail. That so I think it's like anything in here, as I guess Jim was probably saying, is like doesn't immediately need to be elevated to like this is the next project in that has to, you know, blow up because of the needs. We need to be very cautious with this data because we don't really yet have a great idea of where that threshold is where we're like, okay, now we know for sure this is really, really bad. And usually I would just say through most of these, a lot of them show up and they only show up maybe in one peak, you know, and it, there's no morning peak where it hits the threshold, but the midday or the afternoon is. And so it is really helpful, useful data, but I'm also cautious of jumping to too many conclusions.
Further discussion or questions? We'll move on. The planning data forecast.
All right. Thank you again. I'm going to take this one. I've worked on the planning data forecast like every single time it's come up in my career. This was the first time we decided to hand it over to a outside consultant to really help us take the 2020 census data and get that into our modeling traffic zones and do all that. But obviously it was part of our, provide a lot of guidance on it. Let me make sure this works. So I got just a couple slides that I wanted to talk about. The main purpose of why we do this demographic forecasting is one is to develop the traffic zone data. So traffic zones are these little zones. If you've ever seen a traffic model, they kind of determine how much population, how many under 18, how many vehicles. And that helps the model decide where to distribute traffic based on things like links and nodes. And Amy can tell you all about it sometimes if you guys really care. But it's something that we have to do as the for the statewide model, which is also what gives us our air quality projections, et cetera. So we have to do it for that purpose. But then we also use it as our main planning tool for when we're looking out to 2050 to have an idea of where our region's going. Which I think is actually kind of the more interesting of the two. We were thrown a little bit of a curveball this year because whether it was through the COVID pandemic or just Ohio Department of Development being very conservative, by agreement, by ODOT agreement, all MPOs like AMATS have to use the county control totals that are developed by the Ohio Department of Development. But we are free to do any of our own scenario planning with our own control totals for the county. What we found when we opened up the ODOD scenario is that they were projecting our region to lose about 15% population by 2050. Currently, you know, if you're familiar with our population forecast, Summit County has been very stable for the last 20 years. Portage County has been growing for the last 20 years. So this was kind of a surprise to see this level. But the reason we have to do this is because the state needs to say for their model, okay, we're only going to grow by 5%, so every MPO has to use those same control totals to make sure that when they add it all up, the 2050 population, if, you know, if we were just going to be, say, the economic development types to sell it, we'd be like, oh, no, we're going to grow. But the purpose of this is to make sure everybody's playing with the same, same numbers. So this was a pretty big deal for us to see that kind of loss in the region. They do what's like a pivot table that includes births, deaths, in-migration, out-migration. They have a little three-pager that I have that's sort of the reasons of why our area is projected to lose or why the state as a whole, but our counties in particular. Population decline due to Ohio's got a very low fertility rate, or it's a shrinking fertility rate. Our mortality in 2020 increased by 15%. We actually, and this was a surprise to me, we only have about 60, in a decade, The state only saw 65,000 positive in migration for the entire state. So that means with all the inflows, outflows of people moving in and people moving out, our positive is only 65,000 for the entire state. And then in 2020, our deaths outnumbered births for the first time in the state of Ohio. So the general statewide trend is pretty negative. So what we decided to do, because it made us pretty nervous looking at some of these numbers, was we wanted to create a second scenario for, and this is something new for the plan data forecast, where we called it a current trend scenario. And what we did was we used the U.S. Census going back to 2000 to develop regression lines to look to develop county projections for population that we thought were a little more in line with what we've seen over the last two decades. This is the scenario that AMATS will be using primarily for its planning and development of the long-range plan. An idea that, hey, we're not going to lose 100,000 people in the two counties. We're going to try to maintain the status quo, which we think is like a good middle road for us. And I know this is really hard to read, but you can also see some of it on your sheet. Kind of, so the ODOD scenario on page 2 of attachment 5C, you'll see the 14.9%. Our region, which is at 720,000 now, is projected to shrink to 612,000. The current trend scenario, shows us growing by 0.3% to 722,000. And then all the other variables underneath it are sort of connected to that population, so they change depending on that. The two slides I have, which I know are probably harder to read, but it shows basically at the county level for Portage and Summit. So the ODOD actually had Portage County losing 20,000 people by 2050, which seemed, you know, even with all those numbers, that would be a sea change if we actually saw those kinds of numbers. Ours shows Portage County kind of growing, in maybe not quite as fast as it has been, but still showing a little bit of growth. In Summit County, it had Summit County almost losing 100,000 people, 90,000 folks. Our current trends forecast shows it staying relatively stable at a negative 0.5% population. So the ODOD forecast has to be used for our traffic modeling. Luckily, going back to saying we don't have a huge congestion problem, we don't use our model for a whole hell of a lot other than air quality projections. So in that way, our air quality should get better based on the ODOD population projections. But for the way we do our planning, you know, we think the current trends forecast, middle of the road, makes a heck of a lot more sense. And I think it's something that not only from a technical perspective can still carry water, but from a political perspective also doesn't look so dark and drastic. And honestly, they both are just different methodologies to trying to answer the same question, and we felt like we should show both. So I know that's a lot of info. Our plan is to ask you guys to approve all this in September, but I'd be happy to answer any questions or help clarify things, as I know I probably threw a lot of just different stuff at you guys. So.
Well, as you recall, NEFCO and AMATS have battled with the state on county projections for off and on for decades. And I'm a little surprised that you said that you were surprised to learn that the state was requiring the use of these county projections done by ODOD, because that's been a requirement from back in the 80s.
Oh, no, and that doesn't, that, that's always been the requirement. Okay. What we were surprised about was how low the numbers were.
Well, and I wish, and I didn't bring my copy with me, but if you had put up a map of Ohio based by county, based on those projections, you would see red throughout the state, with the exception of north of Columbus and southwest Ohio. So the state ODOD has always been extremely conservative. basically, depending on data that is available for all the counties, and they don't want to hear any Chamber of Commerce, Rosie, whatever, if you can't apply it to all the counties. When I get that. But I'm curious about some of the increases that they're showing in the counties where Intel is going to go. And, well, that's sure, but how was that tweaked where you could have another county that has a solid growth potential and it doesn't get tweaked? So I guess my major question, and you answered most of them, was when AMATS does its planning projections and develops its long-range plan and shows all these various projects that it thinks its population projection can support, there isn't going to be someone at the state that's saying, hold on, where's all this population coming from, and therefore you're wasting money that's not going to come in and all, you know,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and the federal guidance, federal, or I should say the federal register, actually carves out the ability for MPOs to develop multiple scenarios and pick a preferred scenario. And in our discussions with ODOT, as because actually the way we funded this was through an ODOT, basically an ODOT agreement, but they were the ones that helped select the consultant. And ODOT has been very clear with us of, like, yes, do two scenarios, you know. So they've actually been a partner on this as it's been developed. We're actually helping us kind of do some reach out, you know, because there were times when all we would have to do was write something to ODOT and justify why the numbers were why we thought we were going to be better, and they'd say okay. They've kind of changed their tune. They're saying no, we want to use the ODOD without any kind of alteration, at least for the statewide model. But so, as far as I'm concerned, our bases are covered. I guess, you know, it can always depend on when people leave and retire and whatever, if things change, but I feel pretty good about our way forward.
I use the same argument with Ohio EPA and some of our OARC, Ohio Association of Regional Council members, as to, you look at that map and you don't need to build any more wastewater plants, just, you know, replace the pipes. And so, and how's that being justified?
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think that the state takes a very defensible but really narrow view.
Yeah.
And it puts all of us in an awkward position.
Yeah.
No further questions or comments. We'll move on to the freight plan Jeff will present.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 5D in the mail out is the 2024 draft freight plan. It contains an analysis of the region's existing freight system and recommends projects that are eligible for inclusion in the upcoming draft 2050 regional transportation plan. Freight plan analyzes the highway and rail network, contains updated data and analysis since the last freight plan in 2020, and evaluates and recommends strategies to improve freight movement in the AMATS area. Examples of transportation projects that are freight related include bridge replacements, roadway improvements, rail access improvements, and grade separations for highway and rail crossings. The draft freight plan is included in the mail-out link and is also available on the MS website. The staff is asking that you review this document and provide us with any comments, with final approval anticipated in September. Are there any questions?
I didn't make it all the way through the document, but I just wanted to ask a kind of a general question. I know there's a section on safety. I'm just wondering if there's any thought in terms of the lessons learned or that we're learning from the East Palestine accident that should be or could be blended into this plan for our area.
There were some non-specific recommendations or discussions of technology improvements in freight. The biggest safety issue, though, in the freight plan is the grade separation safety issue, which anyone can apply for. We have a table. We kind of prioritizes the areas listed for great separations. That's probably the biggest thing for safety for our area.
No further questions or comments. We'll move on to the transit plan. Matt will present.
All right. I'm sure everybody can read this.
We don't need a motion for this.
No, we don't need a motion.
What? Yes. For transit.
No, right. For the new.
Yeah.
For the resolution. For the amendment to the TIP, Amy will present. A motion will be required.
We're going to get this.
Hey, Mom.
We're going to get this.
Mine don't need a motion.
It's in my mind.
It's next month. So this month we have an amendment to add one project. Revised funding for two projects and delete one phase of one project from the TIP. We're revising funding once again for the Kenmore Leg. It is not a fully funded project, so we will keep amending it until it's eventually fully funded. We did have, it is an air quality analyze project, so in your resolution you will see some information about the fact that it is an air quality project and that we've had to do interagency consultations. Every single time that we revise this project, that will be in there. So just letting you guys know going forward. Also, North Main High Level Bridge project also received more funding. This project will probably also be in multiple times for amendments because it is not fully funded either. The new project is the State Road Widening Project. This is the last project to be added to the TIP from the last round of funding that we approved. And the delete project phase, they had just a small amount of money in right-of-way money, and it was decided that we were just going to move all the money into construction and remove it from the right-of-way phase. Unfortunately, the construction phase is in 28, which is outside of the TIP, so we have to remove it from the current TIP, and it will show up in the next TIP, which will be going through next year. Anyone have any questions? We do need a resolution. Okay. We do need a
There's no further questions. We need a motion.
Motion to approve.
Second, Collins.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposition, same sign. Motion carries. All right, Jeff, you can present the message, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 6D, the TIP amendment for Metro RTA. This resolution adds capital funds to two existing Metro projects. The first project adds approximately $14.4 million in federal funds to the TIP for the purchase of large CNG-powered buses. Additional funds increase the number of buses purchased from 15 to 33, and the new total project cost will be $20,460,000. The second project adds approximately $3.4 million in federal funds for preventive maintenance, with a new total project cost of $8.8 million. Both projects remain scheduled in fiscal year 2025. The reason for the revised resolution time was that the Federal Transit Administration requested an additional whereas be inserted into the resolution portion of the document as part of the area's public involvement certification. The additional whereas can be found in the middle of page 3, and it states, whereas public notice of public involvement activities and time established for public review and comment on the TIP will satisfy the program of projects, public review requirements of the Section 5307 program. And that's it. Yes, you heard public four times in one sentence. But that's what they wanted us to put in there, so that's the reason for the revision to Resolution 2024-16R. Are there any other questions?
Jeff, a motion is required?
Yes. Motion to approve, Buffalo.
Second, Collins.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposition, same sign. Thank you. Curtis, is there any other business?
Only to remind everyone that Heather was going to do a little walkthrough of the website. You'll probably give it a two-minute break for everybody if anybody wants to exit. And then also, you know, we sent, like we joked about, it was 250-some pages. We've been trying not to kill so many trees these days in terms of our mailouts, but one of my questions, I guess, to the members as a general poll is, when we are doing the final approval, would you like to have the printout as part of the mail out, as something that we hand to you when you get in here? Or are you satisfied with sort of the way we did it this time? I know I'm not one that likes to read things on the computer, so I understand why you might want that. But at the same time, when you're doing 80-some copies with 256 pages, it gets a little excessive. So I guess, you know, speak now or forever hold your peace. We'll probably keep doing it the way we did it today. But if you feel really strongly about, hey, I'd really like a paper copy of that report, please let us know, and we can even, you know, make sure you have one beforehand. I don't know if there's any comment or thought on that.
Chris, I would just suggest that you summarize what you just said and put it in the memo for the document, so that no one can come back at you later and say,
yeah.
You know, they stuck us with this, and you can say the text.
Right.
There was consensus about doing it that way.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a good, and it's something that maybe we even want to put on our every agenda. Like, you know, full versions of this report can be, you know, can be received via email request or something along those lines.
It's either that or put sponsored by warehouse or
yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Just to add to that, Curtis, what we've been doing at some of our recent meetings is we'll print, you know, I think, Carrie, you've been running 25 copies of things. So we'll always have some paper copies on hand. It's just, I assume not everybody that comes to a meeting needs a paper copy of every report.
Great. Thank you.
All right, our next regular meeting is scheduled September 19th, 2024. Same time, same place. And again, remind us of the date for the annual.
God damn, I knew you were going to ask me that, Tom. It is October 11th. Thank you.
October 11th. And we'll be seeing that mail out soon.
Yes, you should be getting some registration soon. We're going to be doing a little thing on roundabouts, and also have Dave Kaplan from Kent State University speaking, kind of doing a comparison of U.S. Transportation versus other places around the world. So it should be pretty interesting.
And an open bar?
I'd kill for an open bar, Bob.
All right, my job.